Hi, this is Bob Gruen, rock and roll photographer from New York, and you're listening to Pantheon Podcast.
History in five songs. With host Martin Popoff. A production of Pantheon Podcasts. Let's rock out with Martin.
Well, hello once again. Welcome back to another episode of History in Five Songs with Martin Popoff, brought to you by the good people at Pantheon Podcast. Pleased, as always, to be part of this fast and always expanding Pantheon Podcast Network. We're available on Spotify, iTunes, Amazon Music, basically Google, you'll find me kind of thing. So this is episode 195 of History in Five Songs. I'm calling this Paying Your Dues. So we've done an episode 102 on... we called it Here Comes Success! Exclamation mark. And it was about all the various measures of success. And I've always been fascinated by when I interview these guys, their ideas of success. And then you hear their backstory and you're thinking, how much did they pay their dues? In what ways did they pay their dues? Did they get by without paying their dues, kind of thing? So it's interesting hearing the backstories of these bands and how much work they put in. And I'm also reminded of, being on the Cradle of Filth bus. I'm pretty sure it was Cradle of Filth. And sitting around doing an interview, talking, drinking beers or whatever it was. And they're playing like AC/DC, It's a Long Way to the Top if you want to rock and roll, right? Which basically outlines all the different ways you can pay your dues as a rock band. All the rites of passage you sort of go through. So I want to also... In terms of this paying your dues, when you have paid your dues and you have some success, I do want to talk a little bit about what does success mean. Are you still paying your dues while you have certain kinds of success? That's something we're going to get into as well. So let's start exploring this. I've split it up into categories, the different ways, some interesting stories of paying your dues and what is the typical way of paying your dues kind of thing as well. Let's get into the first track here. Take a listen to this. This is Black Sabbath with Hand of Doom.
Now you wait your turn. You know there's no return.
All right, so the category here is basically instant success, fast success, not really having to pay your dues, getting by without paying your dues, and why in a lot of cases can you do that? Sometimes it's luck, sometimes it's corruption, who knows? But in Black Sabbath's case, it's because they had talent, they had a good idea. And I'm not even saying so here let's start rolling out some of these things. One of the things in terms of paying your dues is woodshedding on your instrument, right? These guys really probably didn't even woodshed all that long because they're not that old when they're doing the first album, right? So it's not about woodshedding. And in this case, I'm calling this category instant success because Black Sabbath really weren't a band for a long time. There was the Polka Tuck Blues Band and Earth into Black Sabbath, but this is a very compressed time frame, 68, 69 kind of thing. They're putting this all together in there, and they've got the first album out February, Friday the 13th, 1970. It's not fully an instant success, but the next album's pretty much a success and they're off to the races. And more importantly, they're out of Birmingham and over to America pretty soon, right? So pretty soon they've got success that is excitement around the band, sales, and they're getting to, basically be a touring rock band, getting out of, let alone Birmingham, getting out of the UK pretty fast. So I think this is a funny situation of a band that basically didn't have to pay their dues very much. Another one that's a little bit in this category, but these guys are paying a little more dues, But, you know, people don't notice the dues they're paying. So that's the other thing with these, with the idea of paying your dues. A lot of these bands we're going to talk about paid a lot of dues to get where they were. And everybody thinks, oh, you know, big rock star, instant success in that. And, you know, and they will remind you in interviews, it wasn't easy, right? It's a long way to the top. But Led Zeppelin's a funny one. So you got two young guys in the band who didn't pay particularly a lot of dues. And then you've got some session guys that had been around a little bit longer kind of thing. So they're a minor super group getting put together, but they are an instant success. So there's really not a lot of heavy duty dues paying in Led Zeppelin to get where they are. Uriah Heep, kind of the same thing. You got the pre-band Spice, but there isn't a long history of lack of success. You know, I looked at a few others that I thought were sort of pretty instant. Creed, to go to a whole different world. You know, the grunge new metal world, formed in 94. My Own Prison was an indie album actually first. 6,000 copies sold, but by 97, you know, they're blowing up. That album's doing well. They worked really hard, but then the next album, they're absolutely huge. So I feel this is a little bit of an instant success thing. Korn, formed in 93, the Korn album in 94, Life is Peachy in 97, pretty darn instant. And, you know, and I gotta say, in Korn's case, maybe a little more than Creed, because Creed, you can rip on them for being, you know the sort of next wave of grunge sort of thing. But Korn, you know, they're kind of inventing this new metal thing. They do have talent. They're strange. They're making exciting, new, different music, kind of like Black Sabbath, right? So they deserve their success, their fast success. They don't really have to pay their dues because they had a great idea. Boston is a funny one, right? Boston is the situation of building this monster, Frankenstein monster album in a lab kind of thing. But there's not this massive touring history, and there's not even a lot of years. So Boston is kind of an instant success. That's one of the biggest selling albums of all time, their debut. They come back in 78, so soon enough, and then notoriously, you know, it gets longer and longer. But yeah, that's an instant success. You know, you can think of Scenes a little bit, and you can think of Alice in Chains being kind of Johnny on the spot. Pearl Jam, even more so, instant success. That first album, 10, blew up immediately. There's not a lot of years in background with these guys. And again, all these guys are kind of young. There's not a long, long history of even having to woodshed or do anything like that. We're going to get into the other things as well, but I'm trying to hold some of this back to put into these categories. Kiss is a funny case. Again, not a long, long history. You know, we do have Wicked Lester kind of not turning out for Gene. We have Peter Criss in a band that makes an actual album, Chelsea. But again, these guys are, you know, they're just fooling around, piddling around. They're not, you know, this isn't a long history of wearing themselves out to become Kiss sort of thing. So they form basically 73, 74, and then boom, they're into the album. Now, the funny thing about Kiss is that here, you know, with all of these, you get into the idea of what is success, right? So I think you can pretty much say Kiss had no really feeling of success through those first three studio albums. You know, they're not even really making a wave. They're actually getting a lot of ridicule. So when you put the ridicule on top of not really making a lot of inroads and being just perennially broke, you can't say that they even felt a whole lot of feeling of success. You get to Kiss Alive, and now they're blowing up a little bit, and you feel there is some success there. But, you know, the dirty secret in the Kiss camp is you take a few more years before you're even really making very much money out of this whole thing, right? So yeah, well, you know, I suppose Destroyer, yeah, that's the other thing I wanted to mention about Kiss. So, one cool thing that happens in the old days like that is they cram a lot of activity into a short period of time. So you think of 73 through to 76, and they put out two albums in 76. That's not a lot of time to pay your dues. And I don't feel that this is a band that you know, woodshedded and woodshedded and woodshedded for years and years on their instruments to get where they are as well. So yeah, you could say if you looked at the action events and not the, you know, not put the temporal on it, but just look at all the stages Kiss went through, it looks like it's a spread out path to success. But if you look at how many years it took, it wasn't a lot of years. The Who's kind of a funny one, you know, that you could talk about the nature of success. Again, notoriously sort of bad situations, spending a lot of money, wasting a lot of money. They're crazy guys. But they have instant notoriety. They get instant press. The girls are hanging on them, all that stuff. So essentially, you know, what is rock and roll success? As stupid kids, you know, they probably thought they were sort of successful. Maybe the money wasn't there for quite a while, but they're kind of successful out of the gate. But it's a little bit of, I guess you could say this is a little bit of a typical success story in that you're getting to do all the things a rock band does, but the dirty secret is there's no money in it yet, kind of thing. And that goes for a while. You know, the breakthroughs, you know, are arguably, I guess, Tommy and Who's Next, and they're, you know, kind of on the road, right? Grand Funk's a funny one. That's pretty much instant success with not a lot of history before those guys. They form in 69, they got a record in 69, and then they have all these gold records in a row. So that's pretty wild. All right, let's move on to our next selection here. Take a listen to this. This is Van Halen with On Fire. Okay, the Van Halen situation's kind of a weird one. The category here is roughly paid your dues at home and then instant success. So Van Halen is a band that the guys got to live at home with their families. They basically, there's a massive market just around the LA area. They don't have to go very far. The first album comes out February 10th, 1978, but they're essentially, you know, the band forms arguably in late 73, early 74, however you want to look at it. David Lee Roth ingratiates himself into the band. He's renting them a PA, and then he's saying, oh, but I got to do a couple songs with you. They hated David Lee Roth. They had him audition back in 71. He did terrible. He's still not a very good singer. He somehow ingratiates himself into the band by the charm and the talk. You know, Mikey's in the band, so they go from these various band names, Trojan Rubber Company, Broken Combs, I think was the first band, Mammoth is the first serious band, I suppose. And so they're into Van Halen, and the funny narrative here all along is that everybody's looking at David Lee Roth and saying, I don't know if he's that great. He's definitely not a very accurate singer, put it that way to start with. So they have their first little bit of success when Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley see them at the Starwood and say, we want to sign you guys. We've got a production company. Gene's got Man of a Thousand Faces thing going. So they actually go after they see their set. Oddly enough, they went to see The Boys with George Lynch, and they didn't do so hot, but they loved Van Halen. And so they went in and recorded some demos immediately. They recorded some demos in New York. And then Bill Aucoin was not that pleased with David Lee Roth and the singing and stuff, and it kind of fell through. And then they shopped that around and didn't get very far. Then Ted Templeman and Mo Austin and Russ Titelman see them, and Ted Templeman loves them, but reservations again about the singer. They almost call Sammy Hagar to replace Dave, kind of thing. Pretty interesting situation. They're moving along. They've everybody loves Eddie Van Halen. He's amazing. But so this is a band that and they're not even really having that much success in this category here. Now this category, the interesting thing about this category is you've got that cushy home life. It's not, you don't got a lot of expenses. There's not a lot of risk for danger. You're not out on the road. You're essentially getting to have your, and these guys did woodshed, of course. Alex and Eddie woodshedded like crazy. Mikey was pretty serious about what he was doing. He went and got some really good gear. David Lee Roth was ambitious, and he came along, you know, by the skin of the hair on your neck or whatever. David Lee Roth stays in the band because Ted decides, you know, just barely I can work with this guy. And even when they're making their record, you know, they would send everybody home and they would work, you know, him and Don Landy would work super hard on Dave's vocals. But anyways, the point is from late 73 through to 1978, that's a fair number of years of not a lot of success and just trying to make it. And they had a lot of shows around town that there were not a lot of people at. They had the famous backyard parties, but they're having fun, right? They're young guys having fun, being in a band, making music. Is that a form of success? Well, whatever. Maybe it's not. But what happens is the album comes out in February of 78, it goes platinum by October 78. They're superstars by the end of the year, or stars anyways. You know, Van Halen 2 comes out rapidly after that. They're essentially, you know, America's favorite band, you know, in a year and a half, 2 years. They're just cranking out the albums. They're massive. They're a massive band by the likes of, you know, Women and Children First and Fair Warning, and certainly Into Diver Down and 1984. They're absolutely huge. So this is a band, you know, in this category that I like to say they paid their dues at home and then instant success, because the instant success literally comes as they're on their first tour ever, right? So they're going out, I think it's with Journey and Montrose to begin with, and then Black Sabbath later, and then all those famous stories of blowing Black Sabbath off the stage. But yeah, so this is getting the cushy home sort of thing. And some other category or bands in this category. I almost feel like Iron Maiden is a little bit like this, because, you know, England is not that big, but I mean they essentially stayed pretty close to you know, East London and all that kind of thing. But, you know, Steve Harris is starting this band. It's essentially 1974, 75. They go through a ton of members, right? So it's a long time, but you're getting to do it essentially at home. You know, they're going along, not having a lot of success. The first album comes out, they're kind of an instant success. Everybody loves them. By the time Killers, they're a super exciting band. Everybody thinks they're great. So yeah, you're getting the critical acclaim. You're getting a rapid rise. Rod Smallwood's involved. They eventually get Bruce. So I feel like this is a paid your dues at home, then instant success. Importantly, and we're going to get to this, if you've noticed, this pay your dues at home with instant success is without any records out, right? So that's kind of the point here too. You're just kind of a nobody band for this long period of time, but you know, that's it. You don't go anywhere. You're not making records. You're not on tour. Twisted Sister, I think, is really fits this category as well. These guys have formed as far back as like 1973, you know, and then finally they're getting a record out. They get Under the Blade out. They get You Can't Stop Rock and Roll. I think Under the Blade is 80, 81? Yeah, I think it's 81. And then You Can't Stop Rock and Roll, 82, 84, I believe, for the one that, you know, breaks the band, and then they do really well at that point. But even the second one went gold. But yeah, so this is a situation very much like Van Halen, but they're actually even bigger heroes than Van Halen. You know, they're playing these very large gigs. They're setting the whole thing up themselves, renting the halls. They're playing around New Jersey, New York area. They're getting, you know, hundreds and thousands of people out all the time. So they're kind of like big, huge local heroes. So it's the kind of band where you do hear these situations where the label guy will come in and say, wow, these guys already have a built-in audience. They know what they're doing. They're on their way. They're just not at the record. Nobody signed them yet. So that happens a lot as well. You know, there's other funny situations with these bands where you don't hear about them. So again, it's with no records and they're basically at home. Kickax, you know, Vices came out in 83. They formed in 75. They're from the prairies. Exciter, first record is, I think it's 83 for that record. And they formed in 1978. So there's, let's see, do we have any more? That's basically it for this category. This episode of History in 5 Songs with Martin Popoff is sponsored by BetterHelp. Without a healthy mind, being truly happy and at peace is hard. The good news is therapy works. But what is therapy exactly? It's whatever you want it to be. Maybe you're not feeling motivated right now and would like some tools to help, or maybe you're feeling insecure in relationships or work, not dealing well with stress. Whatever you need, it's time to stop being ashamed of normal human struggles and start feeling better, because you deserve to be happy. And now you don't have to worry about finding an in-person therapist near you to help. BetterHelp is customized personalized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can start communicating with your therapist in under 48 hours. Join the millions of people who are seeing what online therapy is really about. It's always a good time to invest in yourself because you are your greatest asset. And special offer to History in 5 Songs with Martin Popoff listeners, you can get 10% off your first month of professional therapy at betterhelp.com/5songs. That's better, HELP.com/5songs. Thanks again to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here, taking a break from listening to a little Shouted Out Loudcast episode. Love Tom and Zeus talking all things Kiss. Of course, I was listening to them on my new Raycon wireless earbuds. They have quickly become my go-to earbuds because of the comfort. These soft tips are the best I've ever used. And at this price, plus a Pantheon discount, Raycon is really hitting on all marks. Sound quality is great too. I really love having these three EQ options because I like more bass in the music, but less in my podcast. 8 hours of playtime for the battery is great as well. Surround sound, noise isolating, and awareness mode are all included. These are great earbuds. Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon. Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here. Another day, another podcast I'm working on. This time, it's Famous and Gravy with Amit and Michael. I want to let you know that I loved the Factor Meals package so much that I re-upped for myself, and then I sent a package to my in-laws. Like I was with my first shipment from Factor Meals, the in-laws were as excited to try one of the prepared restaurant-quality meals. Well, they got the shipment of Protein Plus meal plan and were very impressed. See, being in their 80s, anything to make the meal prep easy is a plus for them. They heated the oven per instructions and minutes later were enjoying a very delicious, nutritious, and dietitian-approved meal. One big win for me. But what really floored them was the taste. Like I told you, it's surprising how good these meals taste. Restaurant quality indeed. And like my own shipment, it really was everything Factor Meals said it would be for some seniors. No prep, no mess meals. Factor Meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. Take it from me and my in-laws. Head to factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. That's factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. Thank you, Factor Meals.
All right, let's move on to our third selection here. Take a listen to this. This is Rush with Best I Can. Okay, the category here is the staying at home thing, but also Rush is a band that moved around cold and chilly Ontario, big province here in Canada. We're going to get to that in a sec. But this is a band that had that long period of woodshedding and getting nowhere and playing a lot of shows before they ever had an album out, and then they had the period where they weren't very successful with records out. So the funny thing about Rush, I took a little look at this to remind myself. So Rush forms in 1969. The first album comes out in 74. By 1970, they're leaving Willowdale and Toronto area, and they are actually going out to high schools and places and playing gigs around Ontario. And Ontario is a big place. There's some driving. There's some winter driving. There's some cold conditions. You hear some great stories about these guys and the hardships they endured doing this. But the funny thing is, they go all the way to May 18th, 1974, they play a small festival bill in East Lansing, Michigan at the Northside Drive-In. Okay, so that's their first time in America. Then they play Cleveland on June 28th, 74. So again, they've been around for 5 years or 4.5 years or whatever it is. But the funny thing here is they still have not played in any province outside of Ontario. So like I say, Ontario, big province, you know, the way it's situated, you know, it is a little ways to get to other provinces, granted. But that's the funny thing. So they play these two dates. So they still haven't played another province in Canada. Then they go on a big U.S. tour. I mean, Neil joins the band. The first show is in Pittsburgh. They do about 14 dates. I believe this is the Uriah Heep situation. So they get an American tour, still haven't been outside the province besides America. They finally play Montreal November 1st, 1974, supporting Nazareth and Rory Gallagher. And then they have another U.S. tour. And it's, I believe it's bigger than the first one. And then they play Winnipeg, January 15th, 1975. So they literally play Montreal in Quebec, and they play Winnipeg in Manitoba, literally all the way up to their second album. Pretty crazy. Judas Priest, I feel, is kind of like this as well. So, and again, you know, you can hear more about the comparisons between these two bands, because I think I did a whole episode on Judas Priest comparing them to Rush. But Judas Priest, same kind of thing. You know, England is not, you know, the UK is not a huge place. So I feel like it's still sort of sticking close to home. But they form in 1969 as well. And their first album is 1974 as well. So they go all those years, a lot of member changes during that time, and they're playing, you know, they're not playing just in Birmingham kind of thing, but just like Rush, they have two or three or four albums where they really don't make any money. In fact, they go longer than Rush without really making any money. But what is success? They're on a major label, they're making some of the best music ever made, you know, so they're being very creatively actualized, self-actualized. So they're having that sort of success, but they are absolutely stone broke, really all the way up until, you know, pretty much past Hellbent for Leather and the live album. And it's into British Steel where they finally start having some success. You know, Rush starts having success with 2112. So it doesn't take them that long. But yeah, so the category here is long period before you get a record deal, and then a long, you know, a pretty long period of not having, making a lot of money as a band. And Rush, frankly, didn't make, you know, very good money until basically after Moving Pictures kind of thing. So yeah, they're in this category. Scorpions is another one that's in this category, and they're even worse. I mean, they literally started in 1964. So essentially, and they're, you know, and they're stuck in Germany kind of thing, West Germany at this point, right? So their first album, I think Lonesome Crow is about 72, I believe, and then Fly to the Rainbow, I think is 74. And yeah, Entrance 75, Virgin Killer 76, Taken by Force 77, live album Tokyo Tapes 78, I believe. So essentially, they go from 64 to 72 being nobody, you know, basically not having any success. They continue on not having really any success pretty much until Uli's gone and Matthias is in, and they put out Animal, or Love Drive into Animal Magnetism, you could say. And then even then, they're not that huge a band, right? So yeah, that they're definitely, you know, you want to talk about a band that paid their dues and I'm sure did a lot of woodshedding along the way. It's Scorpions. Pink Floyd is another one, not exactly in this category, but sort of the short story is that Dark Side of the Moon is their eighth album. You know, you think, wow, Pink Floyd, all that success. Look how, you know, great things are going. But yeah, they go eight albums before they have success. You know, a little bit like this, but a little bit more typical is the case of AC/DC. They're from Australia. They're kind of making, they don't have a long period of time before they're making records, and they're super young, but it's kind of the slow rise where they have these little successes along the way. They're getting their deals, but they have a lot of talent. People are excited about them, and things start picking up. Basically, you're doing, so that this is the other thing about success and paying your dues. Like, you know, bands complained that we didn't have any money. So AC/DC probably really didn't have any money during around Let There Be Rock and Power Age. But the thing is, you know, all of us from the outside saying, well, you get to do all the things a rock star gets to do. You get to tour. You know, I'm sure the party life is pretty fun for them. And you get to make records, right? You know, you're sitting on that stoop at the end of your life in the rocking chair, and you've got your grandchildren. And I tell bands this when they get down, right? You know, it's like, you know, or they think they haven't accomplished anything in life or whatever. And it's like, you know what? The coolest thing you'll ever accomplish, and it's pretty cool, is that you made some records. And they're sitting there. They're there forever, right? So that's a form of success there as well. So, all right. Let's play our next track here. Take a listen to this. This is The Clash with Safe European Home. Okay, the category here is punk. So the idea here of paying your dues is a general sense that most of the punk bands, because it was a youth revolution, there was not a lot of woodshedding, there was not a lot of paying your dues. You can go through all the lists of all the punk bands, and Clash is included. There's just very little past to any of these guys. You know, you think of Joe Strummer, he was in the 101ers. But yeah, you look at their clothes, and their regular clothes before punk clothes comes in. Maybe their hair is a little long, but there's not a lot of history with these bands. Stranglers are talked about as being slightly older guys, but even they don't have a lot of rock and roll history. The Jammer, young, you know, they have no history. Elvis Costello has really no history. So, you know, Ramones have a little bit of a history, the kind of 74 leading up to 76 to get their album out. So there's a bit of a history there. Sex Pistols, not a lot of a history. The Damned, no history whatsoever. So the interesting thing here is, did punk bands pay their dues? No, they didn't. And how did they pay for it? They kind of paid for it by burning out quickly, making bad decisions, bad record deals. Things don't happen for them. It's almost like, you know, bands realize this, and it's a story that, you know, that whole Malcolm Gladwell, is that his name? Putting in your 10,000 hours sort of thing. The punk bands did not put in their 10,000 hours, and it didn't pay off. None of these punk bands, you know, essentially made it. You know, a lot of them didn't have a future history, although they made some great music, and a lot of them, you know, kept the band going for, you think of The Damned, you know, long catalog, they're still going now. So they had a life, they had a rock and roll life, but yeah, you don't see the success levels out of the punk bands. And you can contrast this with the whole new wave of British heavy metal situation. Generally, the short story on those bands is first record 1980, 81, maybe their first single 79. It's almost laughable that a lot of those bands basically started in 74, 75. The career trajectory is almost identical for most of those bands. Most of them have their 3 to 4 year period of woodshedding and having their garage and basement bands, learning their instrument, learning the ins and outs of this stuff, and then modestly coming onto the scene. So yeah, punk. 1 year history for all those bands before they get their record deals. New wave British heavy metal, 3 to 4 year history before they get their record deals. All right, let's move on to our fifth selection here. Take a listen to this. This is Stars with Subway Terror. All right, so the category here, unfortunately, is paying your dues and never getting your due. And for that reason, I wanted to pick some bands to mention that really sting with the whole they should have been huge thing, right? So Stars pays their dues. You know, they don't have a big history before the band. There's that whole Looking Glass situation or whatever. But they become this band. They're on a major label. They get a lot of hype. There's a lot of ads for these records. The self-titled debut, the second one, Violation. They've got Attention Shoppers, which is the poppy career misstep, Coliseum Rock, and then they're gone. And then you really hear nothing from any of these guys ever again. They don't really do anything big after that, unfortunately. But they had everything about them seemed to scream like these guys should have been huge. It was just good, accessible hard rock with a good lead singer, etc., etc. Should have been big. But yeah, so this is a case of paying your dues and never getting your due. And before they didn't pay a lot of dues to get to stars, but they paid their dues during being stars. You know, Angel is kind of like this as well. I think of Max Webster, you know, the Canadian band I know and love so well, right? You know, 5-6 albums out sort of thing. Not a long history before they became Max Webster, but they paid their dues during the entire time and never got the payoff sort of thing. You think of Golden Earring, you know, the legendary Dutch band started in like the mid-60s, maybe even early 60s. They had a little bit of a hit with Radar Love and a little bit of a hit with Twilight Zone. I think they got a gold record or two or maybe one. I don't know, something like that. But they've got 25 records out or whatever. They kept going a long, long, long time. Never really got big. Budgie, this gets into the whole thing. I almost made the episode this week. This idea of should have been huge. Maybe that'll be next week's, but so I'll leave a bit of that discussion away. But and it's not really relevant here. You know, in this category, I'm just talking about bands that paid their dues and never got the payoff. But so Budgie, let's just say that for now. This is a band that never got their payoff. They made all these albums, you know, but what is success? Did Burt go to his grave feeling that he was successful? I have a feeling not. He was definitely a little cranky and bitter about this whole thing. So you know, some other quick categories. I thought of having a whole category paying your dues with a different band. Steve Hackett, you know, being in Genesis and then being a solo artist, same with Peter Gabriel. You think of Bruce Dickinson with Samson, Brian Johnson with Geordi. So you could pay your dues in a different band and wind up in a different band and have success or not have success, but it's kind of interesting that you paid your dues in a different band. Motorhead, Lemmy with Hawkwind, and the other two guys, basically Fast Eddie and Phil, didn't have much of a history at all. So they get into Motorhead. And then, you know, I thought of other typical ones. Oh, let's not get into it. This has been a long episode already, but I find ZZ Top's trajectory fairly typical. Quiet Riot, fairly typical. Bluish Occult, Rat, Dawkins. So you think of these bands that have, you know, a typical lead-up period, or even if you're into the albums, it's a slow rise, and then you see some success. There's a whole way of looking at this as typical. Well, let's sum up with that anyways. Man, this might be the longest episode I've ever done. So the typical kind of thing feels like, what should we pick for a pre-album sort of period? 3 years on average. You get the long ones, you get the short ones, but 3 years sounds about right. Then it's not typical to have a massive hit right out of the gate. So hopefully your label doesn't, that's a whole nother thing, you know, in the 90s, you know, with CDs and all these bands coming out, there would be this thing where, you know, if you didn't make it right away, you would get dropped. So there's a lot of bands that didn't get that trial period of 1, 2, 3, 4 records. But yeah, think of Pink Floyd, think of Rush. Think of Stars, think of all these bands that never made it at all. They still got their shot for a few records kind of thing. So yeah, so there's the, you know, if we were to say typical, maybe you had 2 records, 3 records, 4 records, like a Kiss, before you had your hit. So that was kind of maybe your typical thing in the 70s. So yeah, there is typical, but again, I wanted to break this into categories and give you some of the funnier stories. So there you go. We don't have time. I wanted to follow up a little bit on the Making Bass Interesting episode of last week. We had a bit of a debate going with the likes of King's X and Tom Peterson, Joe Beck, schooling me a little bit on the old Cheap Trick situation. And I push back and say, well, you know, I could go do it for, you know, I can go check him for my personal, you know, elucidation. But if I've got nowhere to put that information, I'm not going to go check right now kind of thing. But and then I started thinking of Doug Pinnick, famous bass player with famous bass tone. I don't think off the top of my head that I'm completely thrilled with the bassy, intrusion-y things that he does. To me, it's more about all the other things together. Him as a writer, him as a singer, the songs, the harmonies, the progressiveness. But the bass stuff, when you start getting into Pineapple Skunk and the Doug Pinnick solo albums and stuff, bass gets to be almost a liability with Doug sometimes. I don't know. Maybe that's controversial. Anyways, if you like this show and want to support future episodes, go to Ko-fi, rhymeswithnofee.com/MartinPopoff. Hit that red support button. Buy me a coffee or a pint. This week, I would like to thank Lee Clifford, Peter Kerr, Andrew Meyer, Neil Miller, Augustin Garcia de Paredes, Jeffrey Plasky, Steve Polari, and Brian Sager. You can go to martinpopoff.com for all your book needs. The AC/DC at 50 is selling well. That's the one I'm packing up, signing, and shipping out. But I've got the Damned book, the two Alice Coopers. Still got a lot of the different visual biographies. But basically, martinpopoff.com for all the books that are in print. Yeah, you know what? Maybe I say this too many times, but let's say for homework, go play some Kick-Ass Vices. There you go. Band that was around for a long, long, long time before they made their first album. Talk to you later.
Find all of our shows, notes, social, and links at www.pantheonpodcast.com or wherever you listen to great podcasts. All songs can be found for purchase on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. Please purchase these great and important tracks. Find us on Facebook at The RNRAP. We are on Instagram at RNR Archaeology. Tweet us at RNR Archaeology.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.